Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Elizabeth.
Hi, Joanne. How are you?
Hi. I'm well. How are you?
I made it. Good, too.
Yes. Finally. I was thinking this morning, next week will be a year since we met for dinner with Kevin and my associate Liz in Chelsea.
Oh, can you believe it? I know. I was just thinking that. I was like, could that possibly have been last March before last or last March?
It's funny. I had to backtrack and think, was it a year or 2 years? But it was
last
year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know. It's incredible.
Well,
oh, wow.
Good memories. Sort of a last hurrah.
I know. I sent Kevin an email yesterday saying that we were scheduled to talk, and I said, wasn't that fun? And can't wait for a world where we can do things like that again.
Me too. Well, thank you for making time to speak with me. I've been looking forward to it. Are you in Vermont or are you in New York?
I'm in Vermont. My parents have just gotten their first shot, and they'll be getting their second in a couple weeks, and then I'll be going back to New York for a bit. And there's a lot going on here because there's a big opening. Well, it won't be big considering COVID, but a show of my grandmother's work at the Met. So everyone's getting sort of fired up for that, and we're all going to pilgrimage down to the city, and then I'll probably stay for a bit. And then go back pretty much permanently for the summer. But it's, in a weird way, it's been a nice respite here. Strange, but nice.
Well, so. I'd like, tell me about it. I mean, how have you made, I know that you work between the two places probably on a regular basis, but how has it been being in Vermont for this extended year? And what discoveries have you made in your studio?
Well, I think the main thing that I noticed was how different it is to experience the seasons again. I hadn't been up here full time, you know, consistently spring through winter since maybe I was 14, because I went away to school. So to boarding school. So, you know, I'd come back in the summers and on vacations, but there's something incredible about watching, you know, the incremental changes in daylight and foliage and temperature and that sort of thing, not to mention baby animals being born and growing up and, you know, this whole cycle of life thing that goes on here. It's really so present, which I don't know, maybe it's also being older than I was then. I can really appreciate it in a different way. And also having lived in Brooklyn for about 20 years, you just, you know, the quiet and the different kinds of noises that you're able to actually hear because there's not this din that kind of covers everything up. You know, there's nothing more incredible than being able to be in your studio and then if you feel a bit boggled or eye weary, you know, to walk outside and see nature, you know. And I don't know what kind of effect that has on my work, honestly. It may be that seeing concrete and people screaming at each other and honking their horns has a more interesting effect. It's unclear at this point, but I've certainly noticed the difference. The results will make themselves apparent eventually.
Yeah, it takes time. It's like when you do a residency and you have a whole new experience. Really doesn't begin to reveal itself for a couple of years, I think, typically.
Oh, definitely. It's starting to seem that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have a show opening, don't you, in the spring this year?
Well, it was supposed to be in the spring at Jeannie Greenberg's, but now, you know, because of COVID stuff, and also she bought and is renovating this amazing building just north of the Guggenheim. And it's an amazing space and it has a very interesting history too, but it was a major project and you know how renovations go, they never go on time. So it's actually been put off till September, which in a way is maybe a good thing because maybe we'll be able to see it in person, which is always ideal.
It's not a big difference, actually, from spring to September.
No.
I thought you were going to say another year, but so have you been preparing for that, or do you have everything for that exhibition ready to go?
Oh, no. I've been preparing for it, but I sort of work along at an even pace all the time, but certainly when I have a show in mind, there are really specific architectural requirements, especially for this show, because one of the two rooms that I'm going to be utilizing is a historic kind of neoclassical design room in which there are these niches that used to contain sculptures and some sort of more flat recessed areas in between neoclassical kind of column-like things and marble and all this kind of amazing visual information, but the paintings can't hang, you know, every which way. They have to occupy a certain kind of vertical space and of a certain width and of a certain height. I mean, there's some play that goes on in there, but, you know, I can't make a big horizontal and expect to hang it up in there. So, you know,
wow, you've had to deal with this very specifically, huh? With
I mean, normally I work at, you know, if I can carry it, then myself, then I can work on it because I need to, you know, be able to put things up in the wall and take them down. And but, you know, and also the limitations of my studio size, you know, if I can't get it out the door hanging up on the wall, then it's too much. But I don't mind having that. Sometimes I think I find architectural specificity to be motivational because it gives me a starting point that may seem somewhat arbitrary when you're working on the painting, but it's somewhere to begin because I like to work horizontally, I like to work vertically, I like to work at various different scales, and so just knowing that there is a limit, sometimes limits are productive is what I'm saying, you know?
Okay.
Because
yeah.
It forces you to make choices. Otherwise, anything is open. It's too open for me.
Yeah. Is there, can you tell me something about this exhibition? Is there something to be revealed in the artistry?
It's easier to talk about this classical room because of the restrictions. And also, I think there'll be some works by Ruth Duckworth, who's a sculptor who's no longer alive, who Jeannie represents the state of. And she wants to show some of those freestanding in the room with paintings. And they have, there's an interesting interchange between them. But it's, I don't know, beyond superficially, I need to spend more time with Ruth's work, but I like what I've seen of it, although I've never seen it in person, so that'll be interesting. But I don't know, yesterday, as I was moving along on the first couple of, I'll also say that I only found out I was doing the second room that's so specific a couple of weeks ago, so
okay.
It's been, I thought I was only doing one, I was like, okay, well then, I just thought I have to get going at the dimensions that are necessary, and we'll see how things turn out. But as I was making the works, I started thinking, I mean, this is sort of a bit of a flight of ideas, I suppose, but I was looking at one painting, and there was an area of white and an area of green and some kind of grid-like tape areas that were coming up against organic areas. And for some reason, I started thinking about Alvar Aalto's studio in Finland that I visited several years ago. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's amazing because it was his house and his studio. And he's one of my favorite modern architects, because there's this aspect of organic nature that is always allowed to exist within the kind of idealistic restrictions of kind of geometric modern production, which is sort of an unusual, and some people would say not complimentary association, but I think you can see it in his chairs, you can see it everywhere, but it's wonderful to actually be in a place where somebody lived and gardened and also made their work. And as I, you know, I went back and looked at pictures that I took of the outside of the building, and I thought, these, you know, maybe these paintings will be kind of sections of that experience, you know, or sections of my relationship to him. And I don't know if that would come out in any sort of press release or anything, but it's kind of an experience I had that motivates me to continue with something in mind, you know, other than what I usually have in mind. So sometimes,
you've absorbed it, so you know how it feels.
It's very difficult to explain. Of course, you've been in other artists. I mean, I certainly didn't have the same feeling about Judd's Marfa spot, but that was amazing in its own way. Incredible. It's always incredible to be in somebody's really properly thought out work live space. But the particularity of the architecture and the furniture and the total aspect, you know, and the patterned materials that his wife designed for the furniture, just it's a total work of art. So it's kind of inhabiting that. And for me, it for some reason came back in these works. Maybe it's because, you know, this kind of suburban aesthetic, the suburban reality that he was existing in is more COVID-like. It's like people have fled out to these places where you can be slightly, you know, more out of fear. They've had to come back into touch with at least a small amount of nature and yard space. I don't know. Anyway,
everything talked to each other.
There
was an active dialogue.
Yes, exactly. So, and when I make work, I like to think that way. That's what keeps me excited about going, where the viewer brings their experience to the interpretation of the drama or the scenario, you know, that is in front of them that I've created. So, you know, it has all of my experiences and references, but in the end, that's not really that important. You know, it has to resonate for someone. And oftentimes, most of the time, I find that my impressions of my own work to some degree correlate with other people's who spend time with them, but not always, and I like that a lot too.
Well, I think there's a phenomenon that can occur if the observer approaches the work very openly and is very present and has a visceral response. That's usually a clue that there's a bigger connection, that there's something between the observer and the artist that they share. And I've had some of those personal experiences where I'm very drawn powerfully to a drawing, and I don't know why, but I trust it, and sometime later I find out that there's something very powerful that the artist and I share. Sometimes it's a specific experience. And when I make those discoveries, it's extraordinary. And for that reason, I just won't buy a work of art that doesn't really move me and that I don't feel deeply. It can be beautiful and rendered gorgeously, but if I don't have a really strong internal response, then I'm missing something. So I think for you as the artist,
that.
that's what you want. Not everyone's going to connect, but you want.
Oh, no, definitely not. Sometimes people, to be perfectly honest, also, some people, it's just, it doesn't match the couch. It's not happening, you know?
Yeah.
Which I understand. Mean, it's not that I don't get that. But, of course, as an artist, you'd really rather have somebody have an emotional connection to
it. Well, that's the ultimate, you know? And I bring my whole life to my looking and feeling, as you bring your whole life to your work, what you put into your work, comes from life experiences, sometimes overtly and sometimes not so. Sometimes it's in the subconscious.
Yeah. Definitely.
Which I find that's a whole other subject. But I envision that your work in a classical space, as you describe, is going to be fantastic. I think it'll just be extraordinary.
I'm really excited about it. As I said, you know, architectural spaces are always a motivation for me, but it's rather rare in this country, especially, to get one in which there are any, you know, significantly older details to kind of resonate with. And so,
right.
You know, just the materials, the marble, the sandstone wall, I think it's a black and white tiled floor. I mean, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether it's even absorbable in a space like that. It may end up feeling absolutely chaotic, but maybe in a thrilling way, maybe not. But, you know, that's the kind of challenge that's exciting, because there's some risk involved too.
Yeah. I lived in a John Russell Pope home, an old Georgian home in Baltimore with 30-foot ceiling.
Wow.
And I had all contemporary art, and it was the perfect combination. And what happens is that magnificent architecture, that craftsmanship that's been so lost, sort of serves as a frame.
Yes.
When you think about it.
It's a good way of putting it.
And it just, I mean, the art just sang in that space with the big, you know, columns and the gorgeous detail, the plaster moldings, and it was just a perfect fit. And it was an extraordinary experience, and I feel fortunate to have had it. So I'm translating that, and I had the black and white marble floor, as you described. So I envision it to be quite extraordinary. Let it go. Let it go, Elizabeth. Don't be...
Well, it's going to be great, because when I go down in a couple of weeks, I'm going to get to see it in a totally different state. I saw it when it was just basically right before it got gutted, you know, and it was actually kind of romantic because, you know, things were peeling up and falling off the wall. It was like an abandoned space, you know, and it had all this history kind of oozing from the walls. It'll be really great to see how Jeannie has sort of imprinted herself on top of it. But I think there's been a lot of great stuff, great aspects, original aspects that have been preserved. So, yeah, I'm excited about that.
Well, and you can trust that she has vision, the way that she's together. So you have to trust that too, I think. I think you can.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to dig in more about your artistry. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is your palette. I mean, I can always spot your paintings from across the hallway or whatever, because I find the palette unique. I'm always drawn to it. It's yummy. And it's specific, and I wonder if you would talk about that.
This is always a hard, I mean, when people ask me, maybe not quite as directly, but I've spoken about it before, and it's a little difficult for me because I'm not exactly sure. Well, I could say that one develops a sensibility about color maybe from the places they grew up or in reaction against the places they grew up. I don't know. But for me, certainly the kind of, I guess if you could describe them as more muted and less primary for the most part, although it's not always the case. It's because in nature, that's what I experience as something that makes me feel connected to the world rather than alienated from it. And again, I'm just speculating on my own choices, but I didn't study color theory in any kind of like a severe academic way, because to me it seemed that you know, your sensibility develops naturally. Some things are obvious, but other things, you know, all rules can be broken, and sometimes that's important. So I don't know. I think I try not to, when I buy paint, I try to kind of stick almost to a traditional set of like 8 or 10, 12 maybe options and mix everything from those. So, not that I don't sometimes use straight out of the tin, but the more I'm required to mix instead of buying something already mixed, it seems to best express my natural tendencies, whatever those are. I don't know how to describe them, but yeah. The temptation when you go into a paint shop is, you know, they have all these beautiful versions of violet. But if I did that, then it just never works. I'd rather just mix them myself.
Sure. I mean, I see the colors as being more earthy. And certainly I live, in the mountains, so I relate to them powerfully because of the subtle differences that I see versus what you'd buy in a tube. And it seems to flow naturally from one painting to the next, these colors that you gravitate towards, I think are distinct and part of what distinguishes you as an artist are those choices. And it's great that they just come to you naturally and without a doubt that they've been informed from something you've lived and breathed. So I think that's exciting.
I'm glad you think so. I like it too, but I have a friend who's he's a Yale type color theorist, obsessive, who makes monochromes, and he's always like, it drives me crazy when you describe a color because you just say, it's kind of like this, like the bark of the tree or something like that, So it's always funny because I realize there's a whole world out there in which everything has a name. But for me, sometimes even, this is, I guess, part of color theory, obviously, but if you put one color next to another, it doesn't look like the color that it's supposed to be on the label.
Right.
this we're living in a relative visual universe where, and that to me is, that's interesting just in terms of all sorts of knowledge, that it only means something when it means one thing when it's next to one thing, and it means another thing when it's next to another. And I think that's the language of painting. So that's my language of color anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty terrific. Why raw canvas?
It provides a sort of mid-range where I can make bright whites show up. This is very simple, maybe even simplistic, but bright whites will show up and dark darks will show up. Whereas if I use white, you can't see the white. It allows me to use the full range of like the brightest perceptions in there. I don't know. When I look out the window, I think everything is kind of, there's a middle zone in it, and everything either brightens up from there or darkens down from there. But there always has to be some kind of mid-tone, mid-range, mid-intensity, and canvas is sort of is that for me. When I work on paper, it's different. And maybe this is segueing too soon into a discussion of paper, but paper absorbs differently. You can use white on it and still have it because of the texture of the paper I use. I don't find it analogous to painting on canvas. Even if I painted on white canvas, which of course I've done before, and I certainly did when I was oil painting. I like to be able to put down a white and have it read as white without having to put something down darker and then layer a white on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I think in your paintings
the other day,
the paintings that I'm familiar with, the large ones with that raw canvas. Again, I think that's part of the success formula in your artistry. I just love it, and I think because of the earthiness of the colors mm-hmm. you seem to gravitate towards, the way it speaks on that raw canvas is really exciting. And in some ways, it accentuates the texture of the canvas too.
I think it's really wonderful. It's nice to have you asking these questions because it forces me to articulate reasons, which one isn't always expected to do. But I really like the way canvas feels, and I like the way it has this organic quality to it. And the way I like to work on paper, or possibly part of the reason, the first paintings I ever made were on paper using acrylic before I even started oil painting, and being able to just start, and if you're afraid of this big blank space or any blank space, it's just best for me to dive in and go. And so there wasn't any preparation required. Now, with although the canvas looks raw, it's technically not totally raw, and that I put a GAC, it's a golden product that's like a polymer that keeps paint from, you know, going all the way through. It keeps, you know, it allows it to sit a bit more on the surface, which I like.
But it's matte, right?
But still, yeah. And the preparation is so short, whereas when I used to prime canvases, I would do this incredibly complex process of white acrylic and oil primer, and it just took, you know, ages and ages. And by the time the surface was ready, it was so precious that I felt tremendous anxiety. I mean, mm-hmm. not that I don't still now, but a different kind, you know, where it was just, I really like the feeling of being able to go for broke and see what happens, and then be forced to make another decision after that, and so on and so on, because there is no erasing possible, you know, unlike an oil paint where it stays wet and removable for a certain period of time. Acrylic not only sinks in to this to some degree and can't be removed, but it also dries really fast. So it's constantly an additive process. There is no backtracking, and there is no reductive possibility, mm-hmm. Which creates a lot of drama in my head sometimes, but I find that it produces, you know, that drama kind of, in the best cases, comes out in the finished work. So,
are you still using, referencing printed matter? Are you keeping that archive of?
You mean of internet images and things
mm-hmm.
that I've printed out? Well, I keep them all. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm not really a hoarder in general, but when it comes to visual information, I don't like to get rid of it. So I don't even know. Probably I have all of these things somewhere, you know, on some hard drive that may no longer even be accessible, you know, just broken down digital material. But I do have all the prints and I keep them, but I don't really look through them the way I used to. It's like it all exists in it's all been logged and captured in my mind.
So when you go to a canvas,
they're precious to me.
Well, you know, it seemed when I read about that you had this archive and you kept it growing, and you refer to it, obviously you refer to it a lot more in your younger years, but I'm curious now, and you've made a statement about every painting comes from another painting. Can I find that? Every painting I make is a reference to every painting made before.
Yeah, well, so every painting of mine made before, but also every painting ever made before.
Uh-huh, okay.
So I don't know. I read somewhere someone said something similar to this, because I said that a long time ago, and then maybe it was Joe Bradley or something, but also maybe it was somebody more ancient, that you know, paintings exist in reference to other paintings, and that's kind of impossible to refute in my mind. But also, to me, I'm particularly interested in that, you know, that if I look at something that seems ostensibly totally unrelated to quote-unquote abstract painting in terms of subject or style, then I'll still see kinds of dialogues and evolutions and devolutions and all of that. If you love art, I can't understand why you would be under the totally absurd illusion that newness exists. I mean, it's not, it doesn't make something, nothing is new to me. It's a new version of you know, coming from a slightly different brain and body, but it's, and thankfully so, it's all connected to the very beginning of, you know, self-awareness and perception. So that's exciting. That's not redundant.
No, and it's not. You know, you're taking aspects of these moments and incorporating. I have the same thing as a collector, because I've been so immersed in abstract drawings for so long. When I see something new, it inevitably has a relationship to something I already own. And I'm not aware of it at the time, but once I bring it into the collection, it has all these associations. And oftentimes Liz, who's worked for me for 14 years, will say, you know why you're going to that piece. You understand where that's coming from, you know, and she sees it sometimes before I do. And it's just familiarity.
That must be exciting. It must be exciting to have someone that can see your, you know, from an outside perspective, can see what the choices you're making and how it relates. And that's great.
So, I mean, I think it's the same thing with the maker. So, of course, anytime you go to the canvas, you're going to bring something with you that's steeped in something before. It's inevitable. Uh-huh. How can you not? So I'm curious.
It's funny.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I don't routinely go scrolling back through my older work, but once in a while when I'm expected to look for something and I don't have a very organized archive or anything like that, I'll think, oh, my gosh, something I made in 2005, that totally relates to what I was just doing yesterday. And I didn't even, it's totally different medium, working on white canvas, different scale, all that stuff. And to me, it's kind of, how would I describe it? It makes me feel justified, and it makes me feel that what I'm doing has a level of intention and consistency, because I think sometimes as an artist, one can feel a little out, you know, in space. And when those moments happen, it's self-justifying, which is necessary sometimes.
It's authenticity. It's a sense, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. kind of gives you that stamp of approval that it's authentic, that it's real.
Well, it's peculiar to think of. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It depends on your personality, of course, but I find certainly in the culture I grew up, you don't, you know, bragging about yourself or considering yourself wonderful or saying that you were wonderful to other people was not a desirable way of being. But you know, every artist needs reinforcement and needs a certain level of self-confidence. So, yeah, when you see that what you're doing has a particular consistency and a particular sensibility, that's a great feeling for sure.
It's also a testament that ideas come to you, but sometimes they're before their time. And so you know that you did something 15 years ago that's in a journal or whatever, and suddenly you're doing something today and you go back and look and go, wow, this has been around for a long time. It's finally made its way. You know, that's very exciting.
It is. That's actually one of the greatest things that I experience, or even with objects that have been hanging around the city or images, I think, God, why have I had that for so long? Why don't I just throw it out? And then sometimes the next week it'll end up being a source of a whole new group of things, and that's just, it's like, oh, I wasn't crazy. There was a point to that, you know? It's great.
So tell me what's different now when you're going to produce a new body of work. You've got a show coming up. What's different in your approach than 10 years ago? Because I had the feeling that you were quite reliant earlier on with imagery and keyed off of that imagery into an abstracted form. Sounds like you're less attached to the imagery. And so is it just your imagination and internal imagery that you trust?
I think I know the world. I know the visual world better, what my visual world is. I trust what the parameters of my interest are, if there are parameters. And everyone has them, I suppose. But it's all... I think one gains confidence over time. The more things you make and the more you know yourself, you also know your limits. It's not a bad thing. And so I'm less terrified, for one thing, to just move forward and continue to make things the way I want to make them and not feel... I think also for women in particular, I would say no one listens to a thing you say until you're 30, and then sometimes they don't listen to a thing you say anyway. But I grew up in a pretty feminist environment, and I never felt as if people didn't take me seriously until I got into the outside world. And I thought, I mean, you know, youth is fickle in many ways, but I'm now 46, and I feel like if I say something, then what I mean it, and then other people accept that I mean it. And men probably don't have quite that experience. It takes a lot of effort to get respect and to get listened to. And once you've got it, it feels good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see in your
work. So
that
makes it easier to work.
Yes. Well, I see a boldness. I see power. I see certainty. I see fast movement. It's very physical, but it's so certain. That's how it comes across to me. I think, wow, to make that big movement, that huge gesture, and to feel that and to have that kind of confidence and lay it down, is very exciting to experience.
Well, I'm glad you think so, because it comes from a conflicted soul, you know. Certainly, it's frightening, every move that one makes on that surface, the rectangle, you know, no matter how big or small, it's exposing yourself to a certain kind of risk, even if it's not from outside criticism, but just the risk of having to make yet another decision and another one after that. So sometimes I actually have to talk myself down from the cliff and say, you know, I'll be dilly-dallying and dithering and thinking, oh, I don't know, and we'll leave this alone, and maybe it's fine. And then I get so fed up with that that I just have to dive in and I think, you know what, I don't, this isn't good enough. And so I'd rather have it just die at a kind of a dramatic death in order to risk the possibility that it might actually turn out to be great. So, you know, sometimes I have to throw paintings out because that's the dynamic in which they're made. But that's okay, because oftentimes I need to be reminded, yep, don't do that that way again, because that never works. Or that was good. Yes, that actually ended up being one of those times when that does go well.
I'll keep it.
Yeah, you know, or I think it's a lot like being an athlete or something. You know, you have your baseball player, they have these, they get very superstitious because they have runs where they're hitting home, you know, these periods of time where they're hitting home runs, and then all of a sudden they fall into a slump, and then they start doubting themselves, and, you know, they and that makes them more timid in what they do. And so, you know, it's not that my practice is so incredibly athletic, but certainly the types of moves that have to be made cause one to think, oh, well, maybe I should only work this time of day, or maybe I should, you know, all this. You can really drive yourself nuts with it. So I try to avoid that and have a sense of humor about it. But, you know, I do settle in. I realize I do have a kind of a routine that, for the most part, keeps me as sane as possible and as productive as possible, which both of those things are good.
Do you find your body memory is involved too, that there's instinctively motions that occur that are ingrained in your
definitely.
Body and that you have to learn to manage or not
definitely
manage?
I find that if I don't paint for a couple of weeks, it's like anything involving coordination, it takes a few days, and the number of days it takes to get back to it is proportional to the amount of time I've taken off.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What about tools? Are you working with the same kind of tools when you approach a painting, or is that expanding?
Yeah. Well, it's always interesting and kind of fun when I discover some new way of making a mark, as long as it fits in with my existing lexicon. Some things, you know, make marks in all sorts of different ways, and on their own are kind of exciting, but if they don't cooperate with the same level of, you know, it's sort of like you're composing, or like being a choreographer, you have to put together all these different moves, and there's pacing and rhythm, and, you know, different certain kinds of marks read as either too handmade or not handmade enough, or, you know, this and that. So I generally like to work with my hands and brushes, though actually I use brushes probably the least frequently of any tool, and palette knives and rollers. And I kind of have adapted my own kind of homemade monoprinting technique where I don't have to go, but I can kind of transfer shapes using a roller on, you know, and paper onto the canvas surface. Mm-hmm. So that, creates all sorts of options for repetition and bilateral symmetry and things that interest me in terms of visual culture and perception.
Well, you think of all of these markings as a language, I gather.
Yeah, and like every language is limited. Different languages have different numbers of words, but painting, I mean, if you use paint, you can use it a lot of different ways, but there really is a limit. I mean, and everyone's, if you can imagine something in the world, it's happened. That's my opinion. So pretty much every object has been used to put paint on canvas. It's just how you take, it's like how you use the words or the letters that already exist. You know, there are infinite number of combinations. You just have to get the right one that works for you.
Yeah, you just have to find the right relationships. Are you still working with multiple pieces at a time?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's part
I
of
like
your
that
practice
a lot.
Too. Kind of
that's another way
other.
To feel. Yeah, and it's also a way to mediate my anxiety, because if I become focused on a piece that I can't figure out the solution to, or I'm feeling a little bit shy about diving into, then I can switch to something else. And once I've made some sort of progress or something, then I turn back and I see the other thing with fresh eyes. It also means that I can stay busy more often rather than, I mean, the reality is one has to let paint dry.
Sure.
So sometimes there's some sitting around and I think, I don't have internet in my studio because the temptation to sit there and just do silly things and, or even not silly things, pay bills. I don't know what, but, you know, it's like you can, if you want to avoid having to make difficult decisions, having the internet is great, but I try not to, and I don't have a couch because I also don't want to. The more I'm required to be uncomfortable or stand up, the more I have to face the music. So I don't know. I can't remember what you're.
You have to keep diffusing the energy too. You know, you have.
I'm working on many.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, I only have a certain amount of energy in a day, and I can tell when it's starting to blacken, and then I start making bad decisions and overworking things. And so I have sort of a window of time because I'm a non-break taker for the most part. I kind of really stay on task for 6 or 7 hours in a shot and then force myself to go home because nothing good ever happens really outside of that window. It's just, It's a fatigue, mental and physical fatigue.
Well, it's a physical dance that you're executing as a painter in your studio. And I imagine it's pretty much constant motion and it's fast motion. And at least that's how it feels to me when I look at your paintings. I feel this enormous energy and strength. But I can see how it would get depleted pretty quickly because it's so intense, I imagine.
Yeah. Well, I think, the mental part of it is what really is fatiguing because one has to argue with oneself all the time about what the next best thing to do is. it's exciting, though. I love it, too. So I wouldn't have it any other way. Yeah.
Let's switch to paper because we did want to get to that point at some point.
Yes.
I'm interested to know if you journal or do some kind of drawing or doodling or note-taking or diary on a daily basis.
Not in any kind
or regular.
Well, not, I wouldn't say But I never do a kind of narrative diaristic type
okay.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely find myself writing down words or referencing something, you know, writing down a reference point. Like a couple of days ago, I was like, oh, thinking back to elementary school math and, you know, the XY axis of the Cartesian coordinate system, and thinking about that in terms of those kinds of cross marks I was making in the painting, and thinking about XY and how, you know, that relates to gender, and, you know, just all of these kind of similes and interrelationships of things that seem coincidental but often aren't. And so I'll take, you know, I'll note something down, and it might just be like a cross mark with an XY on each axis, and I'll think, oh, I've got to go back and look, you know, read about that again. I remember from when I was 10 years old exactly what the history of Descartes' theorems were. But you know, and then also make lists of words or books or songs or films. And I always use, I'm not a super OCD neat person, but I like consistency when I'm in the studio in terms of this activity for sure. So I always use basic 8.5 by 11 printer copy paper. And because I use that to actually make print marks a lot, especially in the works on paper, sometimes collage. But I just have a Sharpie and a stack of paper like that, and just write everything down pretty large and just make stacks of sheets. So they can be put in any order, really. It's just kind of thoughts. And sometimes a shopping list gets mixed in, you know.
And then what do you do with the pile?
I just go through it every once in a while, and usually it's because I'm cleaning up my desk. And then I think, oh, right, that thing. Or towards the end of the show, because a lot of times the titles that I come up with derive from the list that I make.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll kind of, once I get to the end of making works for a particular venue, then I go through all of those and say, you know, especially if I'm considering whether I have chosen the right title for something, or just in general to remind myself if I've written something down that I meant to do or I meant to express about the work in writing, because I often have I often have a lot of input in the press releases for the shows. So yeah. So that's
then
the
do you
extent
save
of my
all
diary
material and date it or
yeah.
Okay.
No,
you don't.
I don't. I because that, you know, I think I save it all, but I don't date it because
okay, but it's saved
that
somewhere.
Feels like, oh
just
yeah,
piles
for sure.
Of paper.
It's just that once someone dates something, it's almost pre determining that someone will care at some point,
oh,
which
okay.
feels weird, you know.
Okay.
That like you will have an archive that someone needs to know when it happened, you know. But I don't. But that to me doesn't. Also, I don't. I think locating it in time makes me nervous because I feel like it's all ideas that are constantly cycling through the washing machine,
uh-huh. Right?
You know. So
they circle back.
I don't
yeah.
want to. Yeah. Exactly. That's right.
But you know where they all are, and you have
yeah.
them organized in your head. Interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have boxes of the paper, but I have them in different locations. Like I have huge
right.
stacks in Brooklyn, and then I have huge stacks up here, but I have them all. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just glad you saved them. You didn't throw them away. So tell me about drawing and where works on paper fit into your artistry.
Well, as I mentioned much earlier on, I think that when I started painting, I felt this incredible weight of art history, and you know, obviously there was some family history weight in terms of painting. Well, that wasn't the most traumatizing. It was that I had gone to school in Boston and discovered that, you know, having studied medieval European history, that I had a lot of French philosophy and other 90s writing to catch up on, which made one as a painter, you know, or as a potential painter feel utterly paralyzed. I mean, it was important to read through it, but nothing could be made while that reading was done. No way. So I thought, God, maybe, you know, I'll just make videos. And I was making some videos, and some of them were good. But at a certain point, I moved to New York, and I didn't have a studio yet. And I thought, oh, it's so much easier to work on the computer because you don't have to do this and that. And I got one day I remember going and seeing a bunch of work in Chelsea and thinking to myself, what did I have the strongest response to in both positively and negatively? You know, what did I really dislike the most? And what did I really love the most and feel this kind of visceral one or the other? And it was painting. And I thought, you know, this is ridiculous to avoid this. I have to address this. So I thought, okay, I don't have space to make huge canvases or even medium canvases, and also the smell of oil paint where you're living is super unhealthy and all that. If you work the way up, you know, and I was working with a lot of thinner when I was making them. So I thought, well, maybe I can just cut down the anxiety level and the historical weight by working on paper, because people seem to think that, you know, paper has less value, you know, in a capitalistic sense, because of that. Is of course, it's a silly notion, but, you know, it's less, I don't know, it's durable, it's less grandiose, I don't know. But what it turned out to be, and I think most people or a lot of people find this, is that it is the most amazing experimental space because it's super intimate and it's portable at the spot I was working at. And there's a tactile quality that's impossible to replicate. So both things have their incredible qualities, but I will always think of paperwork in the fondest way because it helped me break through all of this information trend and expectation and the death of painting and all of that kind of stuff, while, again, historically important, was paralyzing. And yeah, paper helps me through that, and it also is just, it's wonderfully calisthenic to work at that scale and on that surface. It absorbs things in a way that canvas never can, and then there's a smoothness to it, and it just feels like endless possibilities, which I think I always need to preserve for myself, that the idea that there's always a way to go back to that place where possibilities exist. And that really feeds into my total practice. So whenever I can, I like to show works on paper as well as works on canvas. But what often happens, as you know, is that works on paper get kind of relegated to a smaller space or a downstairs area or, you know, something like that. And I feel that that doesn't do them justice. So I guess if I had my, I don't know what I would say about that, because it's sometimes not practical to hang them in the same room, but I love them. I guess I'll leave it at that.
I think it's changing. I mean, I'm seeing big changes with respect for works on paper. I mean, when I started 16 years ago, I was hard-pressed to find a show of drawings anywhere. You know, I'd have to go to the flat files. And now you go through Chelsea on any given day, and there are countless exhibitions of just drawings. And oftentimes there are drawings with paintings. So I think it's changing.
Oh, yeah. No, you're certainly right. It's also there's the upside from the critical point of view about works on paper is, given that they're perceived as being less capitalistic, they're also perceived as being smarter and more interesting to speak about curatorially, all sorts of things. And I think they deserve that, you know, that's given it a whole specificity to a field of interest. And I think, I know, but I never, we'll go back to what I do with them. I don't ever think of them as studies or practice or anything
right.
like that.
Didn't you just show a bunch of drawings in Japan?
I showed a bunch in Seoul, in Korea, and they were
Korea. Okay.
Yeah, and they were up with a couple of paintings, and I must say that space, for some particular reason, and also they did a great job hanging it, it worked wonderfully together. And I think partially it's because it wasn't too sprawling. It was a really intimate space, so the paintings didn't for some reason, in a smaller space, the paintings didn't scale-wise dominate or make the drawings feel peripheral, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that about that show. Yeah.
Do you always use the same kind of paper when you're doing drawings on paper or paintings?
Yes, you know, from time to time, I'll look up online and see if other, you know, paper has been, is being produced that, you know, I might like more, or might, I use a Bristol smooth, and, you know, as archival as it can, as makes sense to have. And I like the color, the bright whiteness of the one that I use, and I like the thickness of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, you know, it stands up to a certain amount of abuse, like water,
right.
Or, you know, liquids and scratching.
Yeah. And you use a lot of density in the paint, too.
And
So what's your mental space when you're doing, is there a rhythm to when you do works on paper in the studio? Do you have to be in a certain mental space to approach the paper? Obviously, it requires something very different of you physically from the paintings.
Yes, it's you know, most of it is done either on a table or on the floor, not on the wall. So, I usually don't work on paper at the same time as I'm working on canvas, because part of my brain is then thinking differently. You know, it's sort of half in the world of working in one way physically and half in another, and I don't like to be distracted by that. So usually I set aside a couple of weeks to really consistently work on paper. And then, you know, in between phases of working on canvas, because also it's when I'm working on canvas, things can get a little bit messy, and you know, then I start ending up stepping on the draw. You know, it can become chaotic, and I don't like it when that happens. It's especially because I work in such a gestural way, I have to actively control the chaos that happens outside of the actual painting. You know.
Got it. You know, this is very helpful. I don't know if I mentioned to you, but one of the purposes of me doing these conversations, well, actually two purposes. Number one is I'm missing doing studio visits, and I'm missing being connected to artists. So I thought if we create this on our website, this platform for conversations, it keeps me in touch. And I'm really enjoying the dialogue away from the visual, having to find the language to describe what it is we're seeing and feeling together. And that's been exceptional for me. But I also, because we work with graduate students, and so often graduate students don't have a language developed. They don't know how to speak about their work. And so I thought there would be value in having this on the website. And the schools we work with can easily just go to the website and direct their students to these dialogues to hear professional artists speak about their work. So, it's been really, it's become much more than I thought it would, and I've enjoyed it immensely. So sorry to, you know, kind of keep digging, but it's really
no,
valuable.
Not at all. I think what you're doing is actually a very generous thing to do, because when I was in art school, you know, I went to undergrad to study history, and then I went back sort of to undergrad in a way to kind of catch up on all of the art study that I hadn't done. I had to do that at museum school, and so this is before I did a master's. And you know, that there were no resources like that. Once in a while, if we were lucky, especially if it was Boston, we'd have a painter from New York come in and show slides and discuss their work. But it was nothing like the kind of accessibility you can have now with the internet the way it is. But this in particular, as a place where you could come and listen to various people of different ages and, you know, interests and whatever, just talking about their work, I would have killed for that, because it's so confusing. There's never a class that you can take that will fill that need. It's like you have to stumble blind through trying to figure out how to express as best you can what you're experiencing and what you're attempting to do. And it's very stressful for some people. I think it makes them actually want to quit if they can't figure that out.
Well, and they don't have enough faith and trust in their own lives, and aren't feeling too vulnerable to bring that to the fore.
yeah.
So I see it as a big weakness. And then the other advantage is that I get to partake of in the dialogue as a collector and from an observer's point of view and how I connect. And so I think that it there are two avenues here for the students to hook into, which I think it's been wonderful for me. I've learned so much, and I'm grateful. So I want to thank you. I told you it would be 45 minutes. I think we're approaching an hour, and I know there are other things I wanted I wanted to ask you about this horizontal and vertical thing, because you work horizontally and vertical. Does that mean you kind of turn the canvas around upside down and as you're working?
I usually now start with an orientation that I expect to use, but obviously horizontal tends to reference slightly different, it can be read more narratively, your Western culture left to right, mm-hmm. or, musical culture left to right. But also it reads as a landscape. I mean, it sounds trite to say it, but there's really no other way that it can be said. And then verticality refers more to the body and uprightness.
Right.
Although I must say, in certain Chinese silk hangings, there's a strange vertical relationship to landscape, or in paintings of, hell to heaven. You can have a vertical landscape, but it's not traditionally the way people tend to read things. I try to give people clues to the direction that it's meant to be read in, not just once in a while someone will hang something upside down, but it's actually, given what I make, surprisingly rare. Often I use gravity as clues. So if you see drip marks going down as gravity in nature takes them down, then it leads people to believe that that's most likely the bottom. I also have where the raw canvas is, it feels kind of as if it's, it could be a person on the stage or it could be air in a landscape. Either reading is fine, but naturally I think people do tend to, jump to the conclusion that vertical is more figural.
You're going to be thinking.
You're going to be thinking vertically now. Sometimes. Yes, well, I have
a show coming up.
But actually, it's interesting you ask this question because I've been thinking a lot about that and thinking, am I actually going to be making vertical landscapes? It's funny, sometimes when I say something to a certain thing, then right from that moment on, if I say it out loud, I realize that it's absolutely not true. So that's why it's important to discuss these things. I think artists like to avoid it sometimes, but it's great to have a conversation like this because I always think of it as a requirement to be as articulate as you can about what you do, and not that that makes, not that anyone hearing it makes your work any better or worse. I don't think it can add or it produces another layer of accessibility for people who want that.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't need it, but it's good if they want it.
I mean, I refer to these, when I do studio visits, I call them archaeological digs. And I know you've used that term in your research. And I tell the dealers before I go into a studio that I want to see everything, and I want to see everything from the beginning in chronological order. And it doesn't mean it can be a scrapbook. I don't care. I just need to see where the work comes from. And sometimes artists are not too open to that. Not too often, but occasionally they're not open to that kind of exploration. But for me personally, I need to get to the root of things. I need to really understand where the work comes from, and I need to understand that person doing the making, and it helps me connect in powerful ways. It's not enough for me to just look at the work and feel it and love it. I just need to know more about. They're like, I don't know, I was in an exhibition recently, and I refer to the drawings that were hung, and I refer to them as portraits. They were all abstract, but to me, they were all portraits of an artist, of a person. Told me something about them. So anyway.
I agree. It's a little terrifying. Mine are probably all portraits, too. Sometimes I think, my God, I'm insane. But, but that's
She's
okay.
Crazy. She lives in chaos. You know, the other thing is when you go on the internet, it's so easy to find the same information about an artist over and over and over and over again. The critics just regurgitate the same language, the same stuff over and
yeah.
over again. And so for me, the challenge has been, I've got to find out different information. I want to find out something that isn't in print, because anybody can go to Google and find what they need. So this is fun. Well, I'm sure I've exhausted you.
Oh, no, it's really great, because what you were saying about, the regurgitation, the laziness of that is intrinsic in people. It's not that I don't understand it, but it is laziness to just list something and repeat it constantly. And that becomes, not only does that reify the identity of a person and their work, but it's boring. So it's wonderful to have anything else be available. So thank
yeah.
you for doing this too.
Yes, of course. Well, listen, your family enjoy this great opportunity to share in the joy of your grandmother's work in New York. I think there's a new book out, right? Didn't I read about a new catalog?
Yeah.
And it looks
yep,
pretty
they just
accessible.
Put out the catalog.
Yeah, I thought
yeah,
maybe I would try
I think
and get
it. Great.
Well,
oh
enjoy
yeah,
that.
I recommend it. Yeah.
It'll be pretty exciting for all of you, I know. And I will very much
yeah.
look forward to September. And who knows, maybe I can
yes.
make my way to New York.
I love
wish
that.
You well, and hope to come.
Oh, I forgot to
things.
Ask you though.
What?
Enough about me. How's your knee?
Oh,
better?
God. Well, you know, I mean, I'm up and functioning. I have a little problem with inflammation, and so yeah. I'm not making as much progress at this stage. It'll be 4 months that I'm in at the end of this month, and I was on anti-inflammatories, but. I'm done with them now, and the knee is stiffening up, so I have to go back to the doctor. But, it is what it is. I'm far better than I was in October, November, December.
Well, that's good to hear. I was just, my father is a radiologist, and a friend of mine was having terrible knee problems, you know, torn ACL and meniscus problems and all these things. And she sent through these MRIs for him to look at, and it was so frustrating. But, of course, I thought of you. I was like, well, the knee is such a tricky machine.
But, you know, they've got it down to a science. I mean, my knee is going to be better,
yeah.
better than the original one. And it's just you have to get through this 6 months to a year.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully mine's only 6 months. And you just have to, the first 3 months are hell. And that's just the way it is. And they don't cover that up. They let you know. So how about your ribs?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
ice skating lately?
Almost completely. No. And I've been wanting to, I actually gone cross country skiing a few times, but it was good motivation not to fall down. That's for sure. It's, you know, it took so much longer than I expected. It's one of those
you weren't
things.
Able to work then, were you?
Not for almost 3 weeks, but you
yeah.
know, it was so irritating because you can't put it in a cast or do anything. You just mm-hmm. have to not overdo it, which is just because it doesn't seem like anything. It's very irritating, but I learned my lesson and got some little spikier attachments for my boots, and
okay.
All is well now.
You sure
have. Anyway,
enough.
Thanks
no,
for your
anyway.
Patience.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Look, I'm glad
it's been a good
we
year.
Connect, and we'll connect again, hopefully in person. And I can't thank you enough for your generosity. It was wonderful speaking to you. And
great.
Hope
so
to
nice
see
to
you
talk
soon.
To you too.
Okay. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.